Tiger, Spike, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create the perfect little girl. But Professor Utonium accidentally added an extra ingredient to the concoction, Chemical X. Thus, the Powerpuff Girls were born! Using their ultra-superpowers, Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup have dedicated their lives to fighting crime and the forces of evil!
Hello and welcome to the 38th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and today I am joined once again by Jenny C. of Earth2.net, the show. Hello.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Last time we had dealings with you is when we interviewed Tara Strong, who, amazingly enough, I didn't know at the time was the voice of Bubbles.
Yeah, she sure is.
Yeah, wow. That interview was so awesome.
It was a good time.
Yes, it was. Today we are going to be discussing one of Cartoon Network's groundbreaking cartoons, The Powerpuff Girls. So getting into the history lesson here, The Powerpuff Girls is an American animated television series about three kindergarten-age girls who have superpowers created by the animator Craig McCracken. And the program was produced by Hanna-Barbera until 2001, when Cartoon Network Studios took over production for Cartoon Network. The show had been nominated for an Emmy Award 5 times in the category Outstanding Achievement in Animation. That's it for the history lesson. We're going to go on to our general memories. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on for, as I said this before, for the Tara Strong thing and this episode specifically is because you are a huge Powerpuff Girls fan. So what are your general memories of this show?
Oh, boy. I've been thinking the last couple weeks when I agreed to do this to see if I can remember how I first discovered Powerpuff Girls. And I really couldn't put my finger on it. I think it was just one of those instances of channel surfing and stumbling across it on Cartoon Network. And,
right.
Just immediately being grabbed by the strange-looking animation. I mean, the girls obviously they're human. Well, they're not human. They're superhuman. But they're kind of odd-looking. And so it was more, the interest for me initially was, what's this? You know, and so I paid attention to an episode or two and found the sense of humor kind of endearing. And from that point on, I was pretty hooked. Watched it fairly regularly for a while. I'd say probably the first 3 or 4 seasons are the ones that I'm most familiar with.
Uh-huh.
And those are the ones that I had gone out and bought on the time VHS. Now I have those on DVD. And they're just fun, you know, and cute, and represented superheroes that were female and, you know, could kick ass as well, so that was something that appealed to me, you know, so.
Yes.
I guess that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Mine are, see, I don't know, They hit around, what was it, 94, 95, somewhere around there, or 96?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
A little late to the party discovering them. They had been around.
Yeah.
I know they were the Whoop-Ass Girls at first, and they were making the rounds on, like, animation festivals before they got picked up by Cartoon Network. So they were already fairly established by the time.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I had written in the intro as far as being groundbreaking, because honestly, this is one of the first cartoons that I remember watching on Cartoon Network. I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah, because it was, you know, like we said, it was like early 90s or mid 90s, and by that time, I really wasn't that, and I know this is going to be coming kind of bad for me, seeing as how I run a cartoon review podcast or whatever, but I wasn't really into cartoons back then. I mean, I was, but I wasn't, I didn't really know that there was a Cartoon Network. I mean, I was coming out of the age of, you know, just like you, you know, of like stuff on NBC and ABC and Fox, you know. When Cartoon Network hit, it hit big because there was never just a all-cartoon channel.
Well, right, and also the thing I think that, especially with Powerpuff and also with another show that I got into around the same time, Dexter's Laboratory, one of the things that was appealing was that it was children-oriented, but there were a lot of jokes that were kind of grown up.
Right, right.
And so that made it easy as an adult to latch onto, because you could see, well, yeah, it's silly and fun and, you know, for the kids, but they made sure that the parents who were watching with the kids were entertained as well. And me, not, I'm, you know, not coming from the perspective of a parent, but just being someone older, like, being able to kind of pick up on the stuff that was clearly going to be over kids' heads was kind of, I thought that was kind of cool.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I think Cartoon Network's three main shows back then were this, Dexter's Lab, and Johnny Bravo. And we covered Dexter way back on Tooncast, back in episode 9. But yeah, I mean, this Powerpuff Girls wasn't really anything that, it wasn't that I wasn't really interested in it, it wasn't like at the forefront. And I don't think cartoons back then were for me at the time. I don't know.
Missing out.
Yeah, I know. Alright, well, I guess we can move into the characters and voice actors little segment here. What we do here is normally we'll, you know, discuss all the main characters and what we liked and what we didn't like, or if we have a favorite or a least favorite. The overall description for the Powerpuff Girls is 3 5-year-old girls, as depicted in the opening sequence of each episode. The Powerpuff Girls were created by Professor Utonium. I have a problem with his name. I'm sorry. It's just, if you put a P and an L in between the U, it's plutonium. That doesn't, I don't know. I have an issue with that. That just doesn't sound right to me.
Okay. It never bothered me. I figured that they were making a play off of.
Yeah.
You know,
he was trying to create a perfect little girl using a mixture of sugar, spice, and everything nice. According to the Powerpuff Girls movie, the spices consist of parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, possibly a reference to the song Scarborough Fair. However, he accidentally spilled a mysterious substance called Chemical X into the mixture. Do they ever say what was Chemical X?
Not that I can recall. I know they explain in the movie how the Chemical X got knocked over.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, so I don't want to spoil anything.
I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I haven't seen it all the way through.
Okay. There actually might be an episode where that's explained as well. I can't recall that Chemical X is ever broken down into its various elements.
Of course, you know, that's probably a marketing ploy. You know, oh, it's Chemical X. We don't know what's in it, but it just helped give them superpowers and heat vision and flight and super strength and super speed and all that stuff. Of course, I guess we can get into characters here. Blossom, voiced by Kathy Cavadini, I think is how it's pronounced, who is the smart one and self-proclaimed leader of the Powerpuff Girls. Her signature color is pink, and she has long red hair with a red bow. She was named for having spoken freely and honestly to the professor shortly after her creation. She is often seen as the most mature, level-headed, and composed member of the group. What did you think of Blossom? I mean, I know that Bubbles is your favorite, but what did you think of Blossom's character?
Honestly, of the three girls, she's probably my least favorite.
Yeah.
I have the same problem with her that I have with Cyclops of the X-Men.
The leader
characters tend to be sort of bland, I think.
Yeah.
And she definitely falls prey to that. I mean, she's the leader, and that's her defining characteristic. I mean, not that I dislike her, but she's the least interesting of the girls, I would say.
Yeah, very much so. And if Blossom could be equivalent to Cyclops, I would say Buttercup would be equivalent to Wolverine.
That sounds about right.
Buttercup, who is voiced by E.G. Daily, is the tough one. Her signature color is light green, and she has short black hair in a Dido flip. She was named Buttercup because it begins with the letter B, like her sisters, much to her displeasure. She is a tomboy and is easily enraged. Sometimes her aggression gets the better of her, making her reckless and stubborn. Sometimes I like Buttercup, but I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes the rage part is just... I know that, you know, they are supposed to be like five-year-old kindergartners, but I know five-year-old kindergartners can get very upset, but she's, like, upset. It's like she's on all the time.
See, I like Buttercup. I actually, it's interesting. I would say I'd identify more with Bubbles, but I always, Buttercup represented the kind of character I wish, like, the kind of little girl I wish I could be.
Right.
Because she's tough and doesn't take crap.
Right.
Very good standing up for herself. So, things to aspire to.
Yes.
At least from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. And finally, out of the girls' characters, we have Bubbles, voiced by Tara Strong in the series and by Kath Soucie in the What a Cartoon episodes, is the cute one. Her signature color is baby blue, and she has medium-length blonde hair and two pigtails. She was named for her cute and bubbly personality. She tends to act like the baby of the group, despite being the same age. Her best friend is a stuffed octopus doll she calls Octi. She exhibits the ability to both understand foreign languages, Spanish, Japanese, and communicate with various animals, such as squirrels. I always thought that was so cool. That was so funny.
Multi-talented, that one.
Yes. And I will bring this up again. I told you, I think I told you in the outro of the interview, you know, one of the, you know, when I first heard you on Earth2.net, the show, I'm like, wait, is she famous or something? She sounds just like Bubbles.
I wish. Alas, that is not the case.
Yes. So I'm assuming out of the three heroines here, Bubbles is your favorite, obviously. Professor Utonium, going into him, he always just seemed like a side character to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's mostly there either as a plot device or just in service to the girls, provide them with resources or occasionally discipline. He's had a few moments in certain episodes where he's had a little bit more to work with, but, yeah, mostly I'd say he's relegated to the background.
Yeah, I think there was one episode that I remember him in. Somebody, I don't know who it was, either brainwashed him or did something to him where he was stealing stuff in his sleep or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I don't remember who the villain was, but I do remember that. There's also one where he became a central point of the story because he starts dating a woman who is actually seducing him. In disguise.
Right.
And so he brings about the central conflict in that case because I think she was disguised as... I'm a nice lady was her name.
Miss Bellum?
Not Miss Bellum. Her name was seriously I'm a nice lady was her last name.
Oh, okay.
It was her poor attempt to disguise herself.
Okay.
And he was pretty smitten with her, and so of course this caused conflict because she was using that to try to get at the girls. So.
Yeah.
And then there was another episode where he tried to become super himself, and he built himself a super suit and was going out heroing with them.
I think I remember watching that. The Mayor of Townsville, also known as just the Mayor, who is voiced by Tom Kenny. The Mayor of Townsville, who is referred throughout only as Mayor, even campaigning with the slogan "Vote for Mayor for Mayor." Oh God, that's horrible. That's so bad.
Yeah, that's why it's good though.
Although he is referred to as Barney by his wife in the episode "Boogie Frights," He is short and old, with his fringe of white hair around bald scalp and thick mustache, as a scatterbrained sounding voice. He wears monocle and a small top hat that floats just above his head. The mayor has to be, or mayor has to be, the dumbest character in the entire series. And I mean as far as intelligence, not as far as character base.
Oh yeah, he's very dim-witted. He's lovable, but not very bright.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Miss Sarah Bellum, voiced by Jennifer Martin, the mayor's very competent, statuesque redhead assistant who often handles things he can't, which, in sum, is practically everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she would definitely be the mayor instead of him. He would be the assistant.
Yeah.
Her face is usually never revealed on screen, but there have been exceptions to this in several episodes. In some cases, her face has been shown after having first been replaced by some alternate form, like in Monkey See, Doggy Do, where she was transformed into a dog in The Something's Amiss, where she was dressed like Sedusa and wore Sedusa mask, and in the 10th anniversary special of the show, The Powerpuff Girls Rule, half of her face with her hair still covering part of its right side was actually shown for a fraction of a second. Most of the time, however, whenever she is visible on screen, her face is either blocked by some obstruction, or by her own hair. For some odd reason, I have this weird vision in my head of the hot, like, oh, what is it? Like the hot redhead out of the Looney Tunes cartoons that ends up, you know, she has this beautiful body, but she has a dog face for a head.
Oh yeah, I think I do remember that.
I don't know. And then you have Miss Keen, who is the kindergarten teacher. She's another one of those side characters.
Yeah, she didn't appear in a whole lot of episodes.
Yeah.
She was just a nice lady who ran the school and tried to teach the girls how to behave, even though they were prone to getting into trouble in school or, you know,
yes.
Through the ceiling.
And then this is the last one I'm going to bring up for the, I guess you can call them heroes, but the narrator, who is voiced by Ernie Anderson in the one of cartoon episodes and then by Tom Kenny in the series, the enthusiastic but unseen narrator known for opening nearly every episode with the city of Townsville. Mm-hmm. And often ending with them, so once again the day is saved, thanks to the Powerpuff Girls. Except in a few episodes where someone else in an animate object or another form of the girls gets credit. The narrator is so funny.
Yeah, he was one of the reasons I got pulled in to the show, is because they would give him the best jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of witty.
Yeah.
Some sort of sarcastic humor that was, like, not necessarily appropriate on the kids' show, but was, you know, just amusing. So.
Yes. You know, and I don't really remember the What a Cartoon days, but I know for a fact that I remember almost every episode that I did see, it was Tom Kenny doing the voice for him.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Tara said that when we did the interview, she said that, you know, when he was doing the narrator, he would get like two words into a sentence, and then he would have to start over because he couldn't keep a straight face.
Yeah, I remember her mentioning.
Yes. Alright, well, getting into villains. First up is Mojo Jojo, voiced by Roger Jackson. I am Mojo Jojo.
He's the best.
A mad scientist chimp with a great intelligence notable for his pseudo-Japanese accent and his convoluted repetitive manner of speaking, inspired by the speech patterns of characters in the English dub of Speed Racer. Mojo has to be the most recognized villain of the series.
Oh yeah, he's the most entertaining one, although close second for me between him and Fuzzy Lumpkin.
I was just, right before we started the recording, I was watching some of the episodes on YouTube, because unfortunately I haven't been able to get the complete series DVD set yet. I do want to eventually, but I haven't been able to do that just yet. But why would the city of Townsville allow him this giant tower in the middle of the city?
He's a monkey.
I know.
I don't know.
But he's
should get whatever they want.
He's got this giant headquarters, and that's the thing. All the other buildings in Townsville are either white, blue, yellow, red, or whatever. It's a giant black building with a pink eyeball in the middle of the city. You mean to tell me that you're not going to know that that's the villain's lair?
Sometimes capable of being a good citizen, so maybe that's why they tolerate him. I've seen him out shopping. I think there was, either in the movie or one of the episodes, there was one where he was just out going about his daily business.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember this one, but Fuzzy Lumpkins?
Oh, yeah. Fuzzy Lumpkins was awesome. He was the hillbilly.
Oh, I remember him now. Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty much all you need to say when you're describing it.
And speaking of him, the next villain is him. Tara Strong posted on her Facebook a few months ago. It was before we even got the interview. Something about, her kid was, I think her, she said her five-year-old was watching an old episode of Powerpuff Girls. And she was saying who her least favorite or most scariest villain was for her. And I asked her who it was, because she didn't really say offhand. I said, you know, which villain scared you the most? And she had said that him was pretty much the scariest one for her. It was voiced by Tom Kane, a mysterious, supernatural, red-skinned... I can't even pronounce that. I'm not even going to try it. An immortal devil-like creature, his physical appearance is an amalgamation of sorts with crab-like claws, red skin, pointed ears, and a hooked nose, yellow-green eyes, and a long curled beard, wearing makeup, a woman's red jacket and skirt with pink tulle at the collar, and hemline, and black thigh-high spiked heel boots. Oh, boy.
Creepy.
Just the outfit is creepy before you even hear him speak.
Yeah, he can give you nightmares if you stare at him a little bit.
Princess Morbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Who the heck was she?
She was a classmate of the girls who was jealous that they got all the attention, and initially tried to buy her way into the group.
Okay.
But they refused because they said, "No, we're fine. We don't need any extra help." But she had a dad who had unlimited source of cash, and so she had him pay to buy her like a super suit, and to show them up, she became a villain. And she really just wanted to be accepted, but since they wouldn't accept her, that made her bad.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a reoccurring villain. They usually vanquish her pretty easily.
You
know, and then, she's just the spoiled little brat, rich girl.
Okay. Then we have the Gangrene Gang. These guys were very, very strange, I think. I don't even know if what their takeoff of it is supposed to be. Like, I know they spoof a lot of stuff on this show, but I mean, what are these?
Yeah, I don't think there's any direct list in those guys. Although they are, for me personally, the source of one of my favorite episodes. One of the first ones I think I ever saw was one where they keep prank calling the mayor.
Yeah.
And pretending to be other villains. And so the girls show up at all the other villains' lairs and beat them up.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
And that's the one that made me fall in love with Fuzzy Lumpkins, actually, because he's taking a bath, and the girls show up, and they, each one of them punches him and says something, and, like, this is for all the people you hurt, pow. This is for all the stuff you stole, pal. I'm, you know, making stuff. And then at the end, Bubbles says, and this is for taking a bath, pal. And he ends up getting together with the other Mojo and him, I think are the other two who are pranked. And they're all on the phone together complaining about what's been going on and how they need to stop this from happening. And all he keeps saying is, birthday suit! Because he was upset that they caught him undressed. And it's just really funny. So, and then the end, they end up taking on the gangrene game themselves. And so the villains actually save the day. And so just based on them being a part of such a great episode, I kind of enjoy them for that.
Yeah. The Amoeba Boys, who are, I guess, are all voiced by Chuck McCann, a gang of amoebae who were the villains featured in McCracken's original short, Whoop-Ass Stew. They reappeared in the world premiere tunes, Crime 101. With their gangsterish affections, these aspiring criminals would love nothing more than to be regarded as serious villains worthy of fighting. These guys were nuts. These guys were kind of disgusting, actually.
I never really glommed onto them all that much.
They yeah.
They really made a lasting impression on me. They're kind of lame as far as villains go.
Yeah.
So.
And then we have Sedusa, who mm-hmm. is voiced by Jennifer Hale, a young, beautiful mistress of disguise and seductress who uses her feminine wiles to influence men to do her bidding. When her identity is revealed, she typically doffs down to her leotard battlesuit and fights with her whip-like hair, which she can control. In her introduction episode, Mommy Fearist... Oh, boy. That's just wrong. That's just wrong. Just, no. She posed as an ordinary woman. I'm a good lady. She tried to manipulate the professor against the girls. She becomes powerless when her hair becomes wet or cut off. In one episode, she had the ability to whip off globs of sticky hair gel. Oh, God, why is there something about Mary coming into my head right now? Oh, God. Ah. Okay. Yeah. Sedusa was ranked 5 on the top 10 worst villains list.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of fun.
I don't really remember a whole lot of episodes with her, but and of course I haven't like watched a lot of them. I'd like to once I eventually get that DVD set. I'd like to watch them all and just see what I think of the show after watching them all, like in a marathon or something. One of the episodes I did watch before the recording was the Rowdy Rough Boys.
There is actually have not seen any of the episodes of those characters, so you're going to have to talk about them
okay.
by yourself.
Okay, that's fine. The Rowdy Rough Boys are the male counterparts of the Powerpuff Girls, created by Mojo Jojo using a mixture of snips, snails, and puppy dog tail in a prison toilet in an episode of the same name. His replacement for Chemical X was, in fact, toilet water, as Mojo believed it would have the same potency as Chemical X. God. The Rowdy Rough Boys are violent bullies. They have the exact same power as the Powerpuff Girls in their first appearance, nearly destroy them in a violent clash that reduced a great deal of Townsville to rubble. The girls were so ashamed of their defeat, they planned to leave Townsville. Miss Bellum suggested using different tactic and told the girls that instead of fighting the boys, they should be nice to them instead. The boys were ultimately destroyed when the girls kissed them. Ah. Lovely plot that is. Uh-huh.
Feminine wiles, you can never underestimate them.
Uh-huh. The Rowdy Rough Boys were resurrected later on by him in the episode The Boys Are Back in Town, and much to the girls' shock, they were given immunity to the girls' kisses, which made the boys grow bigger and more powerful. Oh boy, can you say lame plot device? The boys eventually get their revenge on the girls, firstly by grossing them out in various ways, such as cracking their knuckles, picking scabs, and spitting.
Oh boy.
Yes, oh boy. The trio is composed of Brick, voiced by Rob Paulsen. Oh, there's one good thing that that Kevin will like, even though he's not on this episode. He is a huge Rob Paulsen fanboy. Brick is Blossom's equivalent. He is the most aggressive, violent character on the show. Boomer, who is also voiced by Rob Paulsen, Bubbles' equivalent. He is loudmouth, dimwit, as opposed to Bubbles' naive sweetness. His hair parts in the curved fashion like Bubbles. It goes on longer each side. After his resurrection, Boomer's hair is longer and spiky on each end. Then Butch is voiced by Roger L. Jackson, Buttercup's equivalent. He is hyper-aggressive, borderline psychotic, and that's higher than Boomer, but lower than Brick. I think I like the Rowdy Rough Boys episode probably the best, just because there wasn't, before that episode, the girls really didn't have counterparts.
No.
They didn't have someone, or they didn't have a team that would be going against them. I mean, pretty much, you know, the overall basic plot of the show is Townsville's in trouble, the girls kick ass, and then it's saved. You know what this, actually, you know what, it's funny, this show reminds me so much of the 1966 Batman show.
It really
does.
It's kind of campy the same way.
Yeah. So I guess, okay, we know that Bubbles is your overall favorite character, but if you had to pick a favorite character out of the others, who would it be?
Oh boy, Pop Mojo?
Yeah.
Just for his long-winded, monologue, that's usually very entertaining.
Yeah. I'd like to find, and it's probably on the DVD set, I couldn't find it on YouTube, I want to find the episode where Tara had mentioned it in the interview, when Bubbles turns in, or thinks that she is Mojo.
That's right, yeah.
Because I think that'd be very, very funny.
She wears the hat and everything and the cape.
Oh, does she? I'm going to have to find that.
I don't remember a lot of the specifics of that episode, but I very distinctly remember her.
Right.
The gear and the gloves and, like, the whole Mojo outfit. So, yeah, it's pretty funny.
All right. Well, going into the behind-the-scenes segment, actually, I was wrong. It was more like the late 90s. The Powerpuff Girls TV debuted in 1998. It was the highest-rated premiere in Cartoon Network's history. The series consistently scored the highest rating each week for the network across a wide range of demographics, from young children to adults. In October 2000, Cartoon Network created the Powerpuff Girls for its Friday night primetime ratings win amongst cable networks. By 2001, merchandising based on the Powerpuff Girls encompassed everything from t-shirts, toys, and video games to lunchboxes and dishware. Did you have a Bubbles lunchbox?
No, but I had on my backpack that I used when I was in undergrad, and actually part of grad school too, I had keychains. I had hooked to the zipper, so they sort of flew behind me wherever I went. So they were off to school with me like that, but not in the form of a lunchbox.
Yes. In August of 2008, McCracken revealed on his DeviantArt account that he has been announced in that year's Comic-Con that he was working with Cartoon Network on a new half-hour Powerpuff Girls special to celebrate the series' 10th year anniversary. The special aired on the Pan-Euro version of Cartoon Network on November 29th, 2008, on the Powerpuff Girls birthday marathon in the U.S. on January 19th, 2009, and in North America, Cartoon Network, part of its PPG 10th anniversary marathon. I have not seen that yet, so I'd like to see that.
I watched it. It was cute.
Was it?
I remember watching it. But I caught it in the morning before I was on my way to work, so I didn't pay super close attention to it.
Uh-huh.
But it was definitely, if you were a fan, it was there was stuff in there that you could enjoy that was sort of a nod to the fans.
Right.
So, I need to refresh myself and see that one more time.
There we go. As we said before, some of the series staff is Craig McCracken, who is actually the creator, Genndy Tartakovsky. Let's see, do I recognize any of these other people? Some of the writers, David Smith, Don Shank, Amy Rogers. I don't really recognize any of these people, but alright, well, I guess we can go into the actual show. The Powerpuff Girls revolves around the adventures of Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup, three little girls who gain superpowers when they were accidentally created with Chemical X. The plot of the typical episode is some humorous variation of standard superhero and tokusatsu fare, with the girls using their powers to defend their town from villains and giant monsters. In addition, the girls also have to deal with normal issues young children face, such as bedwetting or dependency on security blanket. Episodes often contain more or less hidden references to older, circa 1950s to 1980s pop culture. Yeah, I remember the Buttercup security blanket episode.
Yeah, that was kind of cute.
The show mainly takes place in the fictional city of Townsville, USA. Townsville is depicted as a major American city with a cityscape consisting of several major skyscrapers. The physical location of Townsville has never been determined. Cities like Los Angeles, New York City, Seattle, Paris, London, and Tokyo have been shown throughout the series. Has highly stylized, minimalistic visual look reminiscent of Hanna-Barbera's previous limited animation, including The Huckleberry Hound Show, Yogi Bear, and The Flintstones. In his review of the Powerpuff Girls movie critic Bob Longino of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said that the intricate drawings emanate 1950s futuristic pizzazz, like David Hockney scenescape, and that the Powerpuff Girls is one of the few American cartoons that is both gleeful pop culture and exquisite high art. So at least it got good reviews.
Oh yeah, well the movie is really fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't think it did very well box office wise, but it was a real treat.
Yes.
I have the DVD and I've watched it multiple times. So, and I mean the shows are great too, but the movie was a nice supplement to that.
Right. I guess we can go into the music segment here. According to my information, Thomas Chase, Steve Rucker, James L. Venable, and Jennifer Kez Remington were the ones that worked on the series music. There are soundtracks. There have also been three officially released CD soundtracks, one entitled Heroes and Villains, featuring original songs about the Powerpuff Girls characters by a number of artists, including the new wave group Devo. Wow, I can't imagine a Devo Powerpuff Girls song. Whew.
Oh, yeah. I actually have that CD.
Oh, do you? Cool.
Mm-hmm. Let me just grab it. I can reference some of the other acts that are on there. There's a Frank Black song on there.
There's a what?
Frank Black from the 50s.
That's pretty cool.
The Apples in Stereo, I actually discovered because of this album. They're like a indie pop group, and they have a song called Signal in the Sky that was used on a lot of commercials on Cartoon Network to promote the show. Fizz, who are the band that plays at the end of when the credits are rolling. Shonen Knife, which is a J-pop group. Nobody else that's very well known, but I've listened to this CD many a time.
Right. Alright, well, let's see, I guess we can go into the legacy segment. A total of 79 half-hour broadcasts have been made, one in which has never been shown in the USA, and one which aired during the 10th anniversary special in 2009. Most broadcasts consist of two episodes, while others contain a single episode that spans the entire half-hour. The show spans six seasons in addition to self-titled feature film, which was released in 2002, an hour-long Christmas special, which was released on DVD in 2003. One episode in production, Deja Vu, was never finished. A special titled The Powerpuff Girls Rule aired during the 10th anniversary special on Cartoon Network on January 19, 2009, although it aired before in Europe and Asia. The show has been nominated for an Emmy 5 times in 1999, 2000, 2001, 2004, and 2005 for Outstanding Achievement in Animation. In 1999, the show was nominated for the award for episode 1.09, Bubble Vicious, and The Bare Facts. In 2000 and 2005, the show also won Emmys, both juried for non-animated selections. The show has also been nominated for an Annie Award 9 times, winning it twice. And in 2001, the show was nominated for the Blimp Award for Favorite Cartoon at the 2001 Kids' Choice Awards. The show is on DVD. There is the complete first, second, and third season single disc. Well, it's not a single disc set, but they're just regular season sets. And there's also the complete series collection, okay. I was going to say, why does that say 78 episodes? But it's because that one episode that never aired or something.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess we can go into the final thoughts for the Powerpuff Girls episode. What are your final thoughts, Ginny?
Familiar with it. I kind of want to take some time to go back and revisit some of my favorite episodes, and also catch up on the ones that I haven't seen.
Right.
But, it's well done and very smart and entertaining and just fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree with that. While it wasn't something that was in the forefront of my mind when it was originally out, I have seen episodes over time through Cartoon Network reruns and Boomerang reruns and all that stuff. Like I said before, I'd love to get that complete series DVD set and just do a marathon watch through of the show. And, before I go into the closing, would you like to impart any Weevil stories for us?
Well, his most recent antics, I don't know if they're appropriate to share with your viewers, because people might get grossed out. but I could say I've learned that long-haired cats have a little bit more difficulty than short-haired cats keeping their rear ends clean. So I had to help him a little bit with that earlier this year, and he wasn't entirely cooperative, so I had to call in some backup.
Yeah, I noticed on Facebook the other day that you posted about that this whole no-touching thing is becoming annoying.
That was, related to that issue. the problem would have been very quickly and easily resolved if he would have just let me pick him up and hold him down and do what I needed to do, but...
Mm-hmm. It's one of his hiding spots.
yeah, he can peer out underneath the arm.
Yeah. Do you have anything that you would like to plug on the show, like maybe a Tamale Hut event or anything like that?
I am hosting the first Tamale Hut Cafe Presents event of 2010, Saturday, March 6th, which is in about 3 weeks. I took off January and February just because the weather has been horrible here.
Right, yeah.
I didn't know if people would be willing to venture out in the cold for stories, but John McNally is going to be my special guest. He is quite an accomplished author and personal favorite of mine. His new book, After the Workshop, has just come out,
mm-hmm.
So he's going to be reading from that. He's going to have books on hand to sign and sell. And there's an open mic after that, and good tamales, and good company, and just fun overall. So, anybody in the Chicago area, March 6th, mark your calendars.
Very good, very good. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and you can check out all the other podcasts there. Second, you can stop by productandempire.com/nexus. Those are our forums. The third is you can stop by iTunes, leave us reviews there. Please do this. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say what show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTooncast. Mine is TFG1Mike. And what is your Twitter? Mm-hmm.
And you can usually find me on there, sometimes on live Twitter, when I'm watching a particular pay-per-view, or if I'm watching Raw or TNA as it's airing, I'll do some running commentary. Then I'll also post on there about progress on my wrestling-related novels as well. And occasionally just random thoughts, but usually it's either me talking about televised wrestling or me talking about my own wrestling storytelling endeavors.
How's that coming?
Coming along pretty well, actually. Got some important character development stuff that I knocked out this week. That's helping to inform the overall story. So that came kind of out of nowhere, and I'm getting excited about the project.
Very cool. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be reminiscing on Captain Planet. God. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Oh, Jenny C. Sorry.
It's alright. Saying the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
Hey, remember how at the end of every Powerpuff Girls episode I'd come in and say, "So once again, the day it's famed, make sure the Powerpuff Girls." Oh, that was great!